From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, with just a month before the state budget is due, numerous interest groups converge on the Capitol. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Donald Trump's impact on the New York stock market. And Congressman Maloney will reintroduce legislation to require a federal study on long-term health effects of PFOS and PFOA exposure. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Just 1 month before the state budget is due, numerous interest groups are converging on the Capitol, asking that they be included in the budget. The latest now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Among the more impassioned efforts is from developmentally disabled people and their caregivers. They're seeking $45 million in state subsidies to pay workers more money to comply with the rising minimum wage in New York. Governor Cuomo and the legislature last year phased in an increase. It will eventually lead to a $15 an hour wage in New York City and $12.50 an hour upstate. Former Assemblyman Harvey Wiesenberg, who has a son with severe developmental disabilities, says the money is loose change in a $160 billion state budget. He says worker shortages with vacancy rates as high as 20% at some facilities has led to employees working overtime while not earning enough to live decently themselves.
Now we have people working double shifts. We have people working two jobs. They can't pay their bills. They still qualify for food stamps. And there's something wrong because the state has an obligation and a responsibility to pay these people a living wage, not minimum wage, a living wage.
Wiesenberg says the overstressed and underpaid workers could lead to inadequate care for patients and a return to the bad old days of neglect of the disabled. Wiesenberg has said that his own son, Ricky, was abused by a worker at a care center on Long Island, and he filed a lawsuit.
We're going to have more neglect and abuse, more deaths of people, and we can't let this happen.
Under the state's laws, wages for fast food workers are actually rising at a more rapid pace than for the rest of the workforce. Currently, the minimum pay for fast food workers is $12 an hour in New York City and $10.75 for the rest of the state. For all other workers, it's lower, between $10.50 and $11 an hour in New York City and $10 an hour in the rest of the state. Glenn Liebman is with the Mental Health Association. He says the disparity has resulted in some adverse consequences. He says agencies that provide services to the mentally ill are also suffering staffing shortages as workers go to McDonald's and other fast food outlets to seek better pay with fewer responsibilities.
If you're McDonald's, you can raise McNuggets by a quarter to help pay for the cost of the minimum wage increase. What can we do in the nonprofit sector? We can't charge people money. We can't increase that. What do we do? We're in a very difficult quandary about that.
Groups representing the mentally ill also want $28 million in the state budget for residential housing for people with chronic mental illness. They also complain of severe worker shortages in the group homes. They hope the money will be included in the Assembly and Senate budget plans, which are due out later in March, and the group's requests will become part of larger budget negotiations. They have support among Democrats and Republicans in the legislature, including GOP Senator Jim Todisco. He had a brother who was developmentally disabled and who often became upset and disoriented because of the rapid turnover of his caregivers.
I, my colleagues up here, will not leave this session or this budget session or create a budget that does not have that funding in there with every ounce of strength we have to get it done.
Governor Cuomo, speaking at a cabinet meeting, did not directly address the issue, but he said he sees few sticking points between himself and the legislature in the upcoming budget negotiations. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week, let's start with the stock market. Of course, very important for New York and its economic health, and certainly more and more throughout the country, we turn to the stock market as a reading of the country's economic health, and it has continued to rise, breaking records, and it reached another high this week. As one columnist in the New York Times says, making a mockery of economic forecasts under a Trump presidency. And certainly New York benefits or doesn't benefit, depending on how things go with a Trump administration.
Well, David, let's not forget Sir Isaac Newton and his inimical law that said what goes up must come down. Now, there is unbridled greed going on here. A president announces that he's taking off all of the restrictions, or as many as he can, on personal and private excess. And the market goes wild. They said, good, good, we can make more money doing this. On the other hand, a lot of these people have grandchildren, and they're going to leave a world, an environmental world, which is going to be a disaster and already is approaching disaster. We are chewing the science and what the scientists tell us. We are saying, okay, we're not going to clean up those brown fields the way we were doing. We're not going to look at the water the way we were doing. This is a unmitigated disaster, and it is as much of a disaster in New York, where we have had pollution of our waters, where we finally got somewhere with the Hudson River, although not far enough, where there are PCBs still floating around, which ought to be caught up and are not, because this EPA is not going to be doing that kind of insistence anymore. Where is our wonderful Judith Enck? She is just a voice crying in the wilderness, our Region 2 administrator under Obama, and warning, as have many members of that department, that we are in for a disaster. So could it be good economically for New York? Yeah, they may make some money at the stock market. Yeah, there may be some taxes. On the other hand, it is not a good thing.
From there to another not good thing, and that is the spread of anti-Semitism across the nation, not to mention attacks on Muslim Americans and others. To that end, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was out as a gesture of solidarity. He spoke at the Albany JCC this week. He was also at the Javits Center and at a rally with Orthodox Union students, making the point that we all stand together when acts like this happen. And of course, they've been happening not only in New York, but in other states in the country. And Alan, Governor Cuomo will be in Israel this weekend in this gesture of solidarity. Your thoughts as a Jewish American yourself on what's happening around New York and the country?
Well, David, we didn't have to wait for Trump, as you probably remember, because I read it on our air. I've been getting some really anti-Semitic letters for a while now. The Trump presidency, of course, has emboldened many of these people. It's not just a mistake that they're coming out now. Of course, the Jewish population in America is diverse. It goes in different places. They're Orthodox and Reform. And the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, is one of the sharpest guys when it comes to doing what's right in the context of what's advantageous. And he is doing that. More power to him. New York is a state which has a diverse population, and I think he understands that this is something that needs to be done. However, this is a big, big country, and one wonders whether or not this is going to be exemplary, and one wonders whether Andrew Cuomo's actions are going to be exemplary for others. We do see that finally President Trump has said something about it. He waited too long to do it, but he did it. Whether that will call off these folks who are doing this despicable stuff, and whether Jeff Sessions and his FBI and Mr. Comey and everybody else will find the perpetrators of doing things like throwing over gravestones, that ain't freedom of speech. That's disgusting. And so we know that this could be real trouble. A lot of people are suspecting that this is not going to get better, but get worse.
Hard to add this element into it. Some might consider it crass, but there is that speculation out there that this move by Cuomo is evidence that he's moving toward a potential 2020 run for president.
If there is a bear who doesn't walk in the woods, I can tell you right now, there is nobody who thinks that Andrew Cuomo isn't positioning himself to run for president. And nobody should count him out, despite the fact that he may have a New York accent, which some people say, or that he won't play well in Kansas. Look, a lot of people have been counting this guy out for a long time. They counted him out when his terrible divorce from Kerry Kennedy happened. They counted him out as each of these crises that he's had to undergo have happened. And he's still there, he's still standing, and he's running. I don't have any doubt about that. I don't think anybody that I know has any doubt about it. Whether or not he can make it, I don't know. But his father couldn't, and I think it looms large in his psychological orientation towards his world that he really has to do this now and make this happen. And he'll go for it. I have no doubt about it at all.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok joining us. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney and State Department of Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker were in Newburgh this week, giving an update on the PFOS drinking water contamination that surfaced some 10 months ago. While there, Maloney announced he will reintroduce legislation to require a federal study on long-term health effects of PFOS and PFOA exposure. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Democratic Congressman Maloney made the announcement at St. Luke's Cornwall Hospital, one of three sites recently designated by the New York State Department of Health for expanded free blood testing in Newburgh. Maloney, as he did in 2016, will introduce the Investing in Testing Act to require the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to conduct a two-year study into the long-term health effects of PFOA and PFOS exposure.
As I stand here, I don't have any reason to believe that anybody in the city of Newburgh is going to experience any negative health effects as a result of PFOAs or PFOSs having been in the water. But I don't know that, and I don't want to happy talk it.
New York State Department of Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker supports the legislation.
And we urge Congress to move forward with Congressman Maloney's bill in short order. And I also reiterate that New York State's call on the Environmental Protection Agency to set a maximum contaminant level for PFOS and the other PFCs as well. And as we've heard from the Congressman, this is a national issue. It requires a national response. And if the federal government fails to set a level, then we will do what we need to do at that point.
The EPA in 2016 set new lifetime exposure guidelines for PFOA and PFOS at 70 parts per trillion. It's an advisory level. In the meantime, the State Department of Health last week held the first of two public sessions to discuss the PFOS blood test results of the first 370 people who were tested.
So what we found was that the average Newburgh blood test results from the chemical PFOS were above the current national average. Now, unfortunately, the presence of PFOS in the blood only indicates exposure. It says that exposure has occurred. The challenge is that science has simply not yet established whether future health outcomes will result from the specific blood levels that we've detected. And we all share the concerns of everyone in Newburgh who've got tested. They receive the results, and then they want to know what these results mean for their health. And then they find out that the research simply doesn't exist.
He underscores the importance of discussing the results with one's healthcare provider. Maloney, whose district office is in Newburgh, received his PFOS blood test results last week and says his level is 6. The national average, according to state health officials, is 5. But many of those already tested in Newburgh have results in the 18 to 20 range on average. Joan Cusack-McGurk is president of St. Luke's Cornwall Hospital.
Access is a big issue, and especially when you live in a neighborhood where there is poverty in this neighborhood. If we did not have the access here, where would they go? They would not get tested. So I am thrilled, and I see it as a great opportunity for St. Luke's Cornwall Hospital to serve this community, and we should do that. It's the right thing to do. I'm thrilled.
Meanwhile, President Trump is to address a joint session of Congress Tuesday. Maloney says he will be listening for how what President Trump says might affect the lives of his constituents.
Well, this is where the rubber meets the road. And when you hear these guys in Washington throw around terms like deconstruct the administrative state, I'd like to know what the heck that means when we're talking about the role the EPA plays in testing municipal water supplies, because if it weren't for that program, we wouldn't know about this contamination, and it ought to be extended, not cut back, and we ought to have better research on the safe level of these contaminants in human blood, which depends on federal research dollars continuing to flow, which, by the way, are a tiny percentage of the federal budget.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
To the village of Hoosick Falls, which has tabled a revised $1 million partial release and settlement agreement with the companies deemed responsible for pollution to their municipal water supply with the chemical PFOA. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was in the Rensselaer County Village this week for a special meeting and filed this report.
A proposed $850,000 settlement between the village and companies Honeywell and St. Gobain was tabled in January after widespread opposition. A new version, up for a vote Monday night, was bumped up to $1.04 million and sought to reimburse the village for costs incurred during its response to the PFOA contamination, including legal and consulting fees, an engineering study, and the hiring of a public relations firm. Since the revised agreement was introduced last week, high-profile individuals, including U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, wrote to village officials asking them to vote against it in its current form. For more than an hour Monday night, individuals involved in federal and state government, lawyers, doctors, and vocal Hoosick Falls residents urged village trustees to do the same. That included former U.S. EPA Regional Administrator Judith Ank, a Rensselaer County resident.
This is a really good deal for St. Gobain. This is a really good deal for Honeywell, but this is not the quality document that you should be signing tonight on behalf of the residents of Hoosick Falls.
Those speaking out took issue with language in the settlement and partial release that would prevent the village from suing the companies over future issues related to PFOA contamination in three wells where the chemical was found, and the municipal water system in its current configuration. The system has been outfitted with a filtration system paid for by company St. Gobain. Dr. Howard Freed, former New York State Director of the Center for Environmental Health, also took to the podium.
And I'm quite sure, although it's only my opinion, that if you don't sign, they'll come back with a third offer that's a lot more than this. But they want you to sign away your legal rights, even if it's just the legal rights for those three wells, because as was pointed out, that's the problem that we know. Why would we give away the right to seek legal recourse?
Costs such as future biomonitoring, damages to public health, and many others were not covered in the settlement. Both St. Gobain and Honeywell have entered a consent order with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Noting the tension in the room, Nicholas Blaze, who grew up in Hoosick Falls, made his plea to the village board.
I didn't come here tonight to attack the board because that doesn't unify us as a community. I think it's water under the bridge, but I think it's safe to say the way this was handled was botched. And I think we owe it for the sake of public integrity to table this and put it off to the new board. And that's all that I have to say.
Village elections will be held in 3 weeks. Afterward, there will be four new faces on the board, including the mayor. At the end of a long night, Deputy Mayor Rick DiDonato, who is one of the trustees stepping down, spoke to the crowd in support of tabling the agreement.
That we relook at this and let perhaps the next administration be able to do a better job with this. But let me say right now, our next administration has absolutely no experience either. I'm putting my faith in you that you will be able to do a better job than I have been able to do on this. You have my support.
All village trustees voted to table it a second time, with the exception of Mayor David Borge, who warned of future costs associated with a loan to cover expenses in the absence of a settlement agreement.
We won't be making the loan tonight or tomorrow, but it is a cumbersome and a time-consuming process.
Senator Gillibrand, who did not attend Monday night but sent a staffer, released a statement about an hour after the agreement was tabled. She said in part, quote, "Democracy is at its best when citizens are engaged and have an active stake in their future. I stand ready to help the community in any way that I can," unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Leaders of the New York Farm Bureau were in Washington for the American Farm Bureau Federation's advocacy conference and to meet with the state congressional delegation. New York's largest agricultural lobbying organization has a number of priority issues, and it outlined the top three on a conference call with reporters. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
Last month, the New York Farm Bureau unveiled its statewide public policy priorities, including getting state legislators to enact a refundable investment tax credit for farmers and double the minimum wage tax credit for farms. The group's top federal priority is also related to employment. President David Fisher says immigration reform is in the forefront, particularly after recent actions undertaken by the Trump administration.
Farm Bureau believes in having strong border security, but enforcement cannot be the only approach to fixing a broken immigration system. It should involve having a workable guest worker program that allows our farms to fill positions on the farm when we cannot find anyone locally to do these jobs. This involves having an improved guest worker visa program that addresses both seasonal and year-round needs of our farmers. Reforms need to allow for current trained workers to stay on farms and maintain a consistent workforce to plant and harvest our crops and care for livestock.
Our second national priority for this year is regulatory reform.
New York Farm Bureau Associate Director of National Affairs Elizabeth Walters says they are once again targeting one regulation they believe oversteps congressional intent, the EPA's Waters of the U.S. rule.
It expanded the jurisdiction of navigable waters under the EPA to include areas like dry land on farms. This regulation, because of the way that the environmental studies were done, really doesn't show any measurable improvement in environmental quality, but it does continue to provide the EPA with more jurisdiction on our farms. We're not looking to dismantle important environmental regulations that have a proven value in keeping our water clean. However, the EPA really has failed to establish any scientific justification for this rule change.
The Farm Bill comes up for reauthorization in Congress every 5 years, and the 2018 legislation is already being discussed. Walter says that's the third national priority for New York's farmers.
This is a really big, important piece of legislation that impacts every farmer in the state. It sets policy and funding for items like crop insurance, farm-to-consumer programs, disaster assistance, and conservation programs. The largest part of this legislation is the nutrition title. It takes up about 80% of the spending. We're really concerned with talks of budget cuts. Back in 2014, farmers took a $23 billion cut. We really cannot afford, especially with the economy the way it is right now, to shoulder any more of the burden in terms of budgetary cuts.
The Farm Bureau says farm income dropped $1 billion in New York in 2015 to $5.3 billion and is expected to continue to decrease when 2016's data is released.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1709. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.